From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. This week, we're learning about the Autism Mentor Program at MU with psychologist Colton Miller and participant Chris Brown. The word autism covers a pretty broad spectrum of conditions, which is why we use the phrase autism spectrum disorder. I'll quote the Mayo Clinic here, which defines autism as a serious neurodevelopmental disorder that impairs a child's ability to communicate and interact with others. As children on the autism spectrum grow up, some go to college, which presents a whole new set of social hurdles. The Autism Mentor Program, which is just a year old, teams people on the spectrum with people who aren't, and opens a space for them to do something that is often so hard for people on the spectrum, communicate. First, let's hear from the founder of the Autism Mentor Program at MU, University of Missouri Student Health Center psychologist, Colton Miller.
I have a specialty in working with actually adults who are on the autism spectrum. Because I work for the University of Missouri, most of the individuals I work with, or actually I should say all the individuals I work with, are current students at the University of Missouri. And so typically they're on more of the high-functioning side of the autism spectrum. They're verbal, they're able to take care of a lot of their own needs. Intellectually, they're very gifted and sometimes more advanced than a lot of their peers. So a lot of my work is with high-functioning adults who are on the autism spectrum. I'm currently the clinical director of the Autism Mentor Program here on campus, and so I can talk more about that as well.
And what is autism, and why do we talk about it being a spectrum?
Autism is a neurological disorder, and essentially I think the best way to describe it is individuals who are on the spectrum, their brains are essentially wired differently than a typical brain. And the main deficits or areas of struggle they have are with social communication. We call it a spectrum because it's such a wide variety of experiences that people have who have autism. We have individuals who are very low functioning, who are even nonverbal. They're not able to communicate verbally, all the way up to individuals who are very verbal and can express themselves very well. But the main deficits we see are with communication problems and often patterns of rigidity in behavior. And so that's kind of the common thread throughout the spectrum. But personality-wise, it's as vast as the rainbow. I always say that you've met one person on the spectrum, you still only met one person on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. There's really very few things that you can find in common amongst all of them except for the communication difficulties.
And do we know how people's brains are wired differently? Is that something that medicine really understands?
It's not obviously something that we can run a CAT scan or MRI for. I don't think we completely understand it totally, and hopefully science and the medical field is working on that. But even as of about five years ago, the diagnostic criteria for autism has changed, the way we view it, we're getting better at diagnosing it. And so for a lot of those reasons, we're seeing an increase of individuals on the spectrum.
And what is that diagnostic criteria like?
So typically, what it used to be in the old diagnostic manual, there were like four or five different disorders in the manual. And what we did is we combined all of those disorders into what we call an autism spectrum disorder. And again, the main deficits are typically individuals on the spectrum have struggled with communication and social interactions. They may not be able to understand nonverbal cues. They may not understand hand gestures. Eye contact can be prolonged. They may struggle with hygiene skills, basic life skills, everyday skills. They may have high or executive functioning difficulties. And so it's hard to talk about autism or even read about it because, again, it affects the individuals very differently. But ultimately, again, the main difficulties they have are with social interactions.
And I've been reading and talking with some people, and on one side, I mean, there's many sides to the debate and sort of the conversation about autism. Some people think that there are more autistic people now than ever before and that there's got to be some environmental factor involved in that. Other people think it's something that was just really recently recognized and that a diagnosis protocol was developed, and that's why the numbers are increasing. Has your experience led you to to feel either of those ways?
It's one of the more common questions I get. Current estimates are 1 in 68 individuals can be diagnosed of being on the autism spectrum. Again, the main reason that we're seeing an increase in those numbers is simply because we've taken 4 or 5 diagnoses and combined them into one. Secondly, we're getting better at diagnosing these individuals. If you were to talk to, for example, my father's generation, very few people were diagnosed as being on the spectrum because we didn't understand it. Those in the medical field and psychology, we didn't quite grasp what it meant to be on this autism spectrum. Now we're getting much better at recognizing it, to the point where even in higher education, we have programs like mine that serve those who are on the autism spectrum because we're seeing more and more students coming into college who are on the spectrum. Oftentimes, people wonder about the environmental factors. The big one that you hear in the news is because of vaccines. That question has been answered time and time again, unequivocally. There is zero evidence to support, for example, that vaccine cause autism. Could there be other environmental factors? Sure. I don't think anybody's ruling those out. However, I know autism is a big research interest right now, and people are looking into those things, but we do know it's a neurological disorder. We don't know the exact causes, but essentially, again, the brain is just wired a little differently.
I feel like in pop culture, people with autism are often represented in different ways in movies and on TV, and they're always these sort of brilliant, incredibly quirky, sometimes strange people, and they're there to be humorous. But to live in a way that you can't read other people's social cues doesn't actually seem like something that would be fun or funny. How are the people you meet struggling with that?
It depends on the individual, but overwhelming the majority, it's not fun and it's not funny. You know, a lot of people refer to Sheldon on The Big Bang Theory, and, you know, he's an actor playing a part for laughs. The problem with that is, like most things, this is a real thing. This really causes some major struggles for individuals. The people I meet with, overwhelmingly, the majority of them really have this incredible desire to be able to connect with their peers, to have romantic relationships. Unfortunately, naturally, they don't understand how that happens. You and I, when we're sitting here conversing, we don't have to think about, oh, she's shaking her head and she's smiling. What does that mean? I mean, we just know. Mm-hmm. But sometimes for people on the spectrum, they don't quite, you know, their brain is not wired to understand those facial expressions. They themselves may not have facial expressions or do a lot of hand gestures and things like that. So they may come across as weird or eccentric or off-putting. And unfortunately, what that can lead to, their struggles over a lifetime, is a lot of rejection, neglect, and bullying. And it's devastating. It really wears on people. We can all imagine what it's like to be rejected, but if you add that up over 20, 30 years of a lifetime, that can lead to other concerns such as depression.
Yes, I imagine it could make you want to isolate yourself rather than face this world that doesn't make any sense.
Right. And at the same time, I might add that many people on this spectrum, typically people who are higher functioning, they have great successes at times, and they are able to have friends, to enter in romantic relationships and have healthy, successful relationships throughout their lifetime. But not all of them. For some of them, it's a bigger struggle. For some of them, they're able to do that. But again, the common thread is they all could use a little bit of social coaching and assistance to help figure that out. Some are able to figure that on their own by social observation, but many of them need a little bit of assistance.
For those of you who are just tuning in, this is Intersection on KBIA, and we're talking with founder of the Autism Mentor Program at MU, University of Missouri Student Health Center psychologist Colton Miller. And the people that you work with are in college, and I've heard a bit about sort of a fall off in services for many people on the spectrum when they leave high school, when they leave their school district, and that can be sort of a difficult world after that. What do you see with the people you begin working with, and what services are you providing to these college students?
I think we're doing a great job overall. Even nationally, but mm-hmm. particularly in Columbia, Missouri, there are, I would say, some great and wonderful resources for children who are on the autism spectrum. Now, we're starting to recognize, as I like to say, the children grow up, and it's kind of like, then what? Mm-hmm. And social norms would indicate, well, you go to college or trade school or join the armed forces or, you know, you kind of move on to the next step. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, many people in the spectrum are able to do that. But when they arrive, for example, here at the University of Missouri, it's not as structured as a high school environment. They don't have, for example, a special ed teacher looking after them or their own individualized teacher or tutors, and their parents aren't always as involved. They're sent to this higher education institution where they have to make their own decisions, take care of themselves, and there's not a lot of structured opportunities where people are just automatically going to be their friends, such as athletics and sports in high school, for example. And so they have to figure out how to do that on their own, and that presents them in a new world of difficulty because there's a lot of ambiguity, a lot of things aren't as structured or forced, and so that can create a lot of fear and anxiety for them when they've already struggled making friends, and then you put them in this environment, it makes it equally or doubly difficult. Then you add on top of that, this developmental time in anybody's life is a time to reach out, make new friends, establish healthy relationships, get to know yourself better, and for an individual who's on the spectrum to watch all their roommates and peers be able to do that just so naturally and easily, that can be discouraging for them when they're not able to do the same things.
And in terms of support, what are the best ways to sort of empower these people or to ease this transition for them? What do you do with your group?
What I noticed, and the reason that I started this autism mentor program, I didn't start it here. I started at a previous university, and then I kind of brought it with me, and luckily I was able to establish it here. Essentially, what I noticed as a psychologist is we had, you know, an influx of individuals coming in for a variety of mental health reasons, and one of those reasons were I started noticing they were on the autism spectrum. And once I started noticing that, it became apparent to me that traditional talk therapy isn't always that helpful. I'm not saying that it can't be. I just don't think it's the best choice of treatment for people who are on the spectrum. And so I started doing my own research and studying and kind of practicing with my own clients, and I realized that social coaching and a very direct communication style and very direct behavioral modification seems to be more effective than traditional talk therapy. Additionally, on top of that, I was listening to a podcast, This American Life, and mm-hmm. they talked about a young girl who was on the spectrum. They didn't know. They had all these troubles, was hospitalized. Eventually, they figured out what was going on, and she was just having all sorts of behavioral problems and mood problems and disrupting the classroom. Long story short, eventually what happened is she found a friend, somebody her own age who was willing to listen to her and befriend her and be kind to her and who didn't judge her. And her parents of the daughter who was on the spectrum said it was like night and day. Her mood changed. Her behavior changed. She started mimicking her friend. Everything was just like night and day, and it really, really helped her. And so based on these things, my own experiences and the stuff in the literature and everything that was going on, I thought, you know what? A peer mentoring program, I think, can be a very effective tool here in a university setting. And so that's how we came up with the Autism Mentor Program. And essentially, I train undergraduate students who aren't on the spectrum but have an interest in working with folks on the spectrum on how to be mentors, how to be non-judgmental, non-interfering. They understand what autism is, and they're there to be a social coach, to kind of be a friend, to help them understand how higher academic works. And so for those who want to participate, individuals on the spectrum, they are paired up with people, trained mentors, so they can be of assistance to help them navigate higher education.
That's interesting, because I was going to ask you, you know, if people think that they work with someone who might be on the spectrum or are friends with someone, what are the things that people who aren't on the spectrum can do to help people who are to relate with them or to have more comfortable social situations? I suppose, what do you coach your students to do?
I think the basic thing is something we could all do better of. Be kind. Mm-hmm. Be kind and be understanding that everybody has a story. And these individuals on the spectrum, they may come across as, again, they might be abrasive, they might be too direct, they might be really quiet, they may be shy or anxious, and they might have weird mannerisms, hand gestures, they may avoid eye contact. Understand that there's a reason for those things. And most of the time, overwhelmingly most of the time, they have a great desire to connect and try to be friendly and to get to know you. They may communicate a little bit differently, but that doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just different, and that's okay. So ultimately, just be a kind individual who's trying to be understanding. I think that's the best advice we can give, and that, I think, applies to a lot of things.
Yes, most certainly. What sort of successes or relationships have you seen form through the mentoring program?
So at this point, I think we're in our third semester of doing it. A lot of the mentees keep returning, and so I think that's a good sign that they're getting something out of it. Sometimes mentees or parents of mentees go in, when they hear about this program, for example, they're expecting maybe a little too much, like miracles to happen. Sometimes the mentee's main goal is to get a girlfriend or boyfriend, and that's not really what the program is designed to do. Certainly, we can coach them in that process, and their mentors can help out with that and talk about their own experiences and difficulties they have with that. Therefore, the mentees can relate to that. But some successes is I've really what I've cherished is that the mentors and the mentees, they actually form a really neat bond, and they'll continue even after the mentors are done with the program. The mentees will continue to text them. They'll continue to check in. Essentially, they kind of become a friend, which is really neat.
What do you think happens to the students who work with you when college is over? Because it sort of seems like as more people who are diagnosed with autism become older, the services are sort of following behind them. Are there services for people who are 23, 24, up to their 30s and 40s, or do those people exist in a bit of service vacuum?
Again, it depends on where you are and where you live. I do know that, for example, the Thompson Center here in town are working on some programs to assist adults on the spectrum. And I know Voc Rehab for the state has autism specialists who help adults find employment opportunities. The students I work with, that's always a big concern is, you know, they've made this transition from high school to higher education, and then all of a sudden, you know, like all of us, we've got to go on and get a career or a job or what the next step is. And so we work on interviewing skills. We talk about what an internship is and what employers are looking for. And we talk about maybe being willing to be self-disclosing when necessary to help, you know, potential employers know that, hey, this is something that I'm working on, and these are some of my deficits, but this is what I've done. And so we talk about that transition out of higher education into, you know, a career or whatever the next step is. So to answer your question more directly, I don't know of a lot of great resources yet. However, I know there are some things in development.
Do you find that there are people coming into college who have not been diagnosed?
I would say it's almost half and half of folks I meet with who have already been diagnosed and have received services and have really worked on some things they've wanted to work on versus for the first time in their life, they're hearing what high functioning autism is, Asperger's, same thing. And it's kind of a shock to them. And at the same time, for many of my clients, they realize there's an explanation for why I've struggled for so long. And it can be relieving and a little upsetting all at the same time. And so It's a mixed bag. I meet with people, again, who have been diagnosed and people who have yet to be diagnosed. I've worked with an individual who was in his late 50s, couldn't hold down a job, all sorts of concerns and problems, never had been diagnosed, and it was so blatantly obvious what was going on, and it explained so much for him, and finally he was able to get, you know, some benefits and some structure in his life that helped him kind of move forward and work on the concerns that he'd had for so long that he just didn't understand.
And is there anything else we should know?
The most rewarding work I have done in my career is by far working with people on the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. They are amazingly beautiful. They are complicated. They are funny. They are just awesome, awesome individuals. And I would really encourage medical professionals in particular, psychologists, psychiatrists, medical doctors, to do some reading and to try to get some more experience with people on the spectrum because they're here and they're around us. And like many people, they need our support.
That was Colton Miller, the founder of the Autism Mentor Program at MU and a University of Missouri student health psychologist. Next, I spoke with Chris Brown, an MU student who participates in the Autism Mentor Program.
I got diagnosed with autism, specifically Asperger's syndrome, in June of 2014. So right before I turned 21, I was going through like a weird phase. I'm from St. Louis. So when I came here to Mizzou, I was very, I just started showing a lot more signs and symptoms of Asperger's because I was living with people at the residence halls. Like the entire atmosphere was different from high school where I was seeing people every day within the hallways. But once you actually start living with residents and now that you're past the teenage years and you're going into adulthood, like social cues dramatically change from high school to college. So that's when a lot of the signs and symptoms started showing again, from like when I was 5 and 4 and 3, of just realizing how the way I was interacting with others, specifically women, since I've never been in a relationship before. You know, you always have that, you know, high school fantasy of like, yes, I'm going to finally meet somebody in college. But now that I'm 22, 23, almost 23 out of college, it gets a little bit more difficult. So, yeah, by the time I was almost 20, I just started realizing that I had Asperger's and that I, for the first time ever, I wanted to get counseling. So at first, I went to MU Counseling Center. I did their 12-week program to kind of just, like, talk a lot about things from my past, my personal life, my academic life, my career. And then afterwards, they recommended me to the Student Health Center to meet with people. And then right around that time, Dr. Miller got hired around the summer of 2014, and I started meeting with him every week. And then right around the same time when I was meeting with everything, he created AMP, the Autism Mentor Program. So he recommended it to me. And since January of 2015, I started meeting two mentors every single week. And basically, these two students, whomever they were, they would talk to me. They would ask me, hey, how was your week? You know, and I'd tell them how my week was, both socially and academically, whether, you know, how are your grades coming along? You know, did you go to a party? Did you go out, you know, downtown on Friday night? Did you do anything fun with your friends over the weekend or this week? You know, tell us about it. And so after that reflection, they would ask, you know, well, was there anything strange you want to tell us? Like, was there anything that made you uncomfortable or anything that you thought that you just want to get out there just so that way we can kind of say, hey, you know, you that was probably a little bit awkward of you to say in person, but here's what you should work on. Or if you're interested in meeting up with people after work or after school, here's how you go about that so you don't just stand there awkwardly. So it would just be a variety of social cues, specifically social cues for college kids, because, you know, college kids, you know, you like you want to have fun and you're also serious about your work. But at the same time, it's also a learning curve. It's a huge learning curve just for kids on the autism spectrum, because we got to work twice as hard as the other kids on campus just to, you know, have fun and meet new people or have a relationship.
It's really interesting what you're saying about high school, because high school was sort of a social world that you had gone into and learned to understand and you adapted to. And then you're sort of thrown into a completely different world with new cues, but it takes time to catch up and sort of understand what those new cues are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, especially here at University of Missouri, like, you know, I've always asked, you know, because I got accepted to other colleges, University of Kansas, you know, Jayhawks, whatever you want to say, and then Missouri State, Mizzou. I chose Mizzou ultimately because of the just the convenience, the way that the university looked, and for the journalism program. And I always ask if, you know, what if Mizzou's just a really, really preppy kind of school, just the way how, you know, school spirit is so way up. It's such a social school that, you know, that's out of the question. I mean, you know, you can't compare to Mizzou to private schools like Maryville and St. Louis or to community colleges or Columbia College or CMU here, you know, down the street. Like, Mizzou is such a social college that the expectations are, the social expectations at least are just so high. So, you know, sometimes I do ask myself, you know, what if I'd gone to a quieter school like Missouri State or Kansas? But I'll never know.
And Asperger's is part of one of the conditions that's included within the autism spectrum. But you hadn't actually been diagnosed until you came to college, or were you diagnosed earlier at any point?
That's right. I wasn't officially diagnosed until the Student Health Center until June 2014. I mean, when I was little, my teacher said, you know, you definitely show strong signs of Asperger's. For example, you're very creative. You're incredibly intelligent. You'd do the same things over and over again. When I was a kid, I had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich every single day. And even when I go to Subway, I still get the exact same thing, your turkey Italiano melt with, you know, lettuce, tomato, black pepper, and mayonnaise. Like, I do a lot of the same things every single day. So that's a huge habit of Asperger's. I also sometimes can't stand change. Like, sometimes I don't like, you know, moving, or like whenever as a kid, like I was very sensitive about getting a new pet, just like a big change like that, or moving to another house. So that would be like a very big, hard change for me because I liked the way things were. And even here in college, though, like sometimes eye contact's not really a problem. Like when I was a kid, it was somewhat of a problem, but the Asperger's depends on everybody. Some people have it a lot worse.
How does participating in the Autism Mentors program, what does that do to make socializing easier for you? Is it just being able to ask somebody who sort of naturally understands these cues, how they're naturally understanding these cues? How does it work for you?
For people like me who do want to get help and, you know, be better social people, so the mentors are students, but they don't have Asperger's or autism of any kind. They've got clean heads, as I put it, quote unquote. And they basically just talk to you. Like from their non-autistic perspective, they get to tell you what's right and what's wrong. They get to basically comfort you if like something went wrong with a friend or, you know, you didn't get invited to a party or if you wanted to go out but you didn't just because, I don't want to be around the alcohol scene, that party scene. They're just there to talk to you. That's what I love about it.
How do you think the transition will be for you graduating from school and starting a job? You're finishing up school now, so like everybody else, that's sort of a time filled with a lot of potential but a lot of pressure as well.
I just really hope that by the time I'm out of here, it's not like game over. And then day one outside of college, it's like, boom, I already failed. But the biggest thing is that I'm just glad that I've done this for 2 years. The fact that I got diagnosed in the first place and I've actually tried to be a better person. You know, some people may say I'm still the exact same person. A lot of people have told me that I've changed so much just socially, how I'm a lot more, I wouldn't say professional, but just a lot more casual, a lot more not as hands-on, a lot more just cooler, if that makes sense. But, you know, yeah, that's a big fear that I have almost every day. I don't say every day, but almost every day. I wonder what's going to happen. But as long as I still have, you know, my friends, my family, and that I just keep doing what Dr. Miller keeps telling me, take all the lessons from college and I incorporate them into the real world, hopefully I'll show that I've improved, make my mentors proud, make my doctors proud, make everyone proud. But as of right now, as for the future, I don't know. I'm not Doctor Who. I don't have a DeLorean. I wish I did, but I don't.
That was MU student Chris Brown talking about his experience with the Autism Mentor Program at MU. Thank you for spending your time with us here at Intersection, conversations in our community. I want to thank our producers, Katie Eisterhold, Christopher Baer, and George Schramm. And of course, thank you to our guests, Chris Brown and Colton Miller. Our music is Montana Skies. We also have some good news to share. Intersection will now air at our regular time, which is 6:30 on Monday evenings, and again on Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. So if you miss us Monday, you can just tune in Wednesday. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection, here on KBIA 91.3 FM.